This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
A good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen in Los Angeles and everyone listening around the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And here with me, of course, is my beautiful and talented and intelligent co-host, Ms. Carrie Kasem. Hey, Carrie.
Thank you, Alan, for that wonderful introduction.
I never let you down. I read it just as you write it. We have a great show for you, folks.
Thank you, Alan.
Last week's show was so great. Having Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil on Don Passman talking about music law, talking about Beautiful, the Carole King musical. If you haven't heard that show, listen to the podcast. Very incredible. We had Dr. Jen Mann, Barry and Cynthia's daughter on as well. Go to our Facebook page and you can listen to the iPad, same thing. All these technical terms are just getting me so confused. And today we're going to have clarity about the world, about the human condition, about law, about constitutional law, about behavioral situations where human beings. Carrie, can you get off your iPad, please? Or what is it?
Your phone? Hilarious. I've opened the book because we
the
are
book.
About
is
to...
it the Bible?
It is the book.
Is it Shakespeare?
Nope. It's The World According to Star Wars.
Wow.
Yes.
That's the fourth most important book in the world after the Bible, after Shakespeare, and after, I don't know, you tell me.
I don't know. What would it be for you? I think it'd be for you like the Torah or something.
The Torah? I don't know about that. I don't know that I have free choice, so I don't know that I can make that choice. I think I'm determined to say what I'm going to say, and for me, it's going to be the story of Kirby Puckett. Okay, you don't know who that is.
That went way over my head.
That's baseball. You know what?
What?
Do you know that UFC, the franchise, was bought for $4 billion?
I do.
The same amount as the Star Wars franchise.
I do.
Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about something that's really much more important, because today we are honored on Gervy's Law to have Cass Sunstein on our show. For those of you who don't know who Cass Sunstein is, if you want your head to spin, Google his name right now. It's Cass Sunstein, and you will just be blown away. This is an incredibly prolific legal scholar. In fact, Brian Leiter, who was just on our show a couple weeks ago, puts out that top 10 law faculty and scholarly impact. From 2010 to 2013, Cass Sunstein, as cited, doubled, more than doubled, second place, or almost doubled, Erwin Chemerinsky, who's on our show all the time. And third is Richard Epstein, who will be on our show in a few weeks. And then down the list, you have William Eskridge, who was on our show, Akhil Amar, not too long ago. So it's quite a cast of characters. But Cass Sunstein really separates himself. He's the Robert Wamsley University Professor at Harvard Law School. From 2009 to 2012, he was the administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs under President Obama. He's written a number of books. In fact, the last two books are really incredible. Why Nudge, Conspiracy Theories and Other Dangerous Ideas, both written in 2014. Check them out on Amazon. He's written over 30 books to date, and he has written scholarly articles. He writes about everything. Cass, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. And usually, when I run down our guests' accolades, their accomplishments, what they have done, I always ask them what they are most proud of. But with you, I'm going to ask you a different question. Here's the question. What's your greatest regret in life?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I wanted to be a professional squash player of the high order. And I kind of made it into college, but I never made it into the high professional ranks of squash. Not that most people would be excited about doing that, but I had hoped to.
Squash is the one with you use with your hand. It's kind of like racquetball,
no,
but
isn't.
You use your
it
hands.
We're not,
what is
you didn't go to an Ivy League school,
I want to know
so
what squash is.
Okay, we'll tell you. I'll tell you about it afterwards. I want to ask
people
Kat.
Are actually going, what squash?
Everyone knows what squash is. Okay.
Squash is a sport with a little racket inside a court. It's kind of like handball without hands. With
that's right. Okay, I was kind of right.
But you're using a racket. It's like racquetball, but the neck is really long.
I said...
You did play, though, I read somewhere, against one of the top squash players in the world. Isn't that true?
Oh, I've played against a number, and I've lost every single one.
Oh.
You know, when I asked you that question, I thought you would bring up what people say about what parents would say to their kids. Because in the book, The World According to Star Wars, which, by the way, is a fantastic read,
you
talk about regrets that people have and how, you know, the interesting interrelationship between kids and parents, and you relate it to Star Wars. So why did you say that parents always feel guilty that they didn't do what they should have, or kids feel that they haven't been the best parent?
Well, I do think that deep in their hearts, many parents, blessed not to be one, think that they didn't devote enough time and attention and care to their children. I have two young ones, so I hope not to have those regrets. I have one who's older, and I don't. But many parents think, you know, especially dads, I think I didn't give that the kind of priority I should have. And I think many children think, you know, when their parents are old or gone, I wish I'd been a better child to someone I really loved and who took care of me. So this was not really an autobiographical comment, but it just is so that, you know, there's such a tight connection between parent and child on both sides. And if you don't do it right, it's going to sear your soul.
You know, you have so much great insight into a lot of aspects of life, but one of the things I think you missed in this book, and the book is called The World According to Star Wars. We're going to talk about it today because we can talk about so many topics when we talk about The World According to Star Wars, and that's what I liked about it. But you start off the book saying that there are three kinds of people: those who love Star Wars, those who like Star Wars, and those who neither love nor like Star Wars. And you even make a little quip about your wife, Samantha Power, saying, well, you know, Cass, I don't really like Star Wars, but I think you missed a fourth group. And unfortunately, I fall into that fourth group. Do you know what it is?
I don't.
It's people who don't like Star Wars, people who actually kind of hate Star Wars.
No, completely. I got it. But my category, if I may say, includes those. So the people who don't like or love Star Wars includes the people who are indifferent to Star Wars, who dislike Star Wars, who don't like Star Wars, who hate Star Wars, etc.
So why do people hate Star Wars?
Well, I think they either have bad character or don't have enough information. Those are the two reasons.
Or they don't see it.
What about...
I think in your case, it's not enough information or familiarity.
And that may be true. And believe me, when I read this book, I'm starting to get into it. But I'll tell you, there's a certain arrogance about people who really love Star Wars. And they seem to be able to put themselves ahead of others who may not be as knowledgeable. One of my favorite movies is My Dinner with Andre. And I'll tell you, a lot of people hate that movie because they think it's boring. There's no action. The opposite of Star Wars. So I think I have a valid claim when I see people who really embrace Star Wars, and they almost have this arrogance that if you don't know it, if you don't know these characters, you're not worthy.
Well, let me tell you a little bit. So I wrote this book beginning as a kind of positive person on Star Wars, not a Star Wars obsessive or expert in any way. I got into it because of my then 5-year-old boy. And since the book came out, I've actually spent much more time with Star Wars aficionados of the type that you're describing. And talking to them, they're actually, in my experience at least, the opposite of arrogant. These are often people who are, you know, either extremely well-educated in something like physics or art, and they just got into Star Wars, and they love it with a kind of childish, not in the sense of they're not full adults, but they have the kind of enthusiasm of a kid, which is lovable. And I hope I have that. I've learned to have that. And then there are a lot of people who are Star Wars aficionados. You know, they didn't have a chance to go to law school. They didn't have a chance to go to the kind of college that would get them in a position to go to law school. They're not doctors, but they're really smart. And outlet for their smartness is Star Wars. And they love it. It fires their imagination. And those people, I just I admire them so much, and they're the opposite of arrogant in a way. They're the humble people who have this thing that they cherish. And talking about the book, it's been, you know, the people who didn't go to law school or medical school, who couldn't probably name four Supreme Court justices, those are the ones who have seemed to me the most impressive, really.
So what I want to ask you, because I don't want to denigrate your arguments in Star Wars, but I find one, and you're an amazing debater, as you just, you know, totally refuted my claim there. Try this one on, because this is what bothered me a little bit. I found your argument a little bit, and I know it's not a relative term, but self-defeating or contradictory, because you are able in a really incredible way bring in the human condition and attach it to meaning from Star Wars. But in the book, in episode 4, which, by the way, folks, that's one of the chapters of the book, you talk about psychoanalysts, and you say that they look for patterns in dreams, thoughts, and behaviors. You say even when they are creating those patterns, they're not finding them. They're creating, they neglect randomness and serendipity. You go on to talk about literary critics, and you talk about Shakespeare saying that they're coded messages. You talk about the Bible saying that it's the message, the Bible code, hidden messages, it's a fraud. And I totally agree with you. I really believe in what you're talking about, the randomness and serendipity of life, and that codes, and I took a course in Israel Discovery Seminar, and the rabbis were telling us that the Torah had all these codes and everything. How are you able to show all of this meaning from Star Wars when you're trashing the psychoanalysts, the Shakespearean critics, and the Bible?
Well, it is true. So it's a great question. Thank you. It is true that, you know, some interpretations of some things, like there's a comma in Article X of the Constitution, and I don't mean Article X, there isn't an Article X, I mean just a placeholder for part of the Constitution, and the comma shows that, you know, the framers believed in something, and that's made up.
Right.
And you can do that with Star Wars. My interpretations of Star Wars, I think, don't have that kind of comma and pattern-seeking quality. Interpretation number one is that the movie's really about fathers and sons, and the child's kind of need for paternal love, and the father's need to connect with the kid. And that's not about commas or, you know, let's say not good psychoanalysis. That's really there. That's Return of the Jedi. It's The Empire Strikes Back. In a way, it's The Force Awakens. It's not like searching for a pattern. Another thing I think Star Wars movies are really about is freedom of choice.
You know, Cass, we have to take a quick break. I want to pick up, when we come back after this message, on freedom of choice. It's great that you brought that up, because I love these themes. And the fathers and sons, I myself, like you, I'm a father of two young kids, Hudson and Harper. I know your kids, Declan and Rianne, are a little older than mine. So the father and son things really ring true with me. But freedom of choice is something that I want to talk versus determinism. And I want to get your views on that after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We'll be right back.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I'm 51 years old, and 6 months ago, I started taking Andro 400 to increase my testosterone. Since then, I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger. And now my wife tells me I have to take Andro 400.
Hi, this is Ron Johnson from Utah. After 10 weeks of taking Andro 400, I lost 13 pounds, and my waist went from 36 to 33. That was 8 years ago. I continue to take Andro 400, and I've maintained my weight at 172. Gained muscle and energy. I'm 63 now and feel better than I have in 30 years.
Andro 400, the natural way to increase testosterone, lose belly fat, gain energy, and feel great. Try Andro 400, the safe, effective, affordable way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Introducing.
It is me, Michael D. Catherwood, and on the next Dr. Drew Midday Live, we will be talking Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm not talking about LeBron James, nah, man.
And what is it?
Republican National Convention. It's going to be on and popping.
It's going to be really classy.
Plus, I'm joined by the amazing Lisa Guerrero. We'll take your calls, as always. Remember, on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And we are back. We're talking to Cass Sunstein. He's the Robert Walmsley University Professor at Harvard Law School. Of course, he's a well-known legal scholar. The book we're talking about right now from the legal scholar is The World According to Star Wars. And before the break, Cass brought up one of the main themes in his book, and of course, as he relates it to Star Wars, freedom of choice. Before we talk about that, because, you know, Cass, I think you probably could have just written a book like Sartre did, Existentialism is a Humanism, and you could have gone with that, but you used something that is, I think, hitting home with people, Star Wars, because the Star Wars franchise is selling a lot more than Sartre is at this point in history. But Carrie, you're bugging me here because you wanted to ask Cass a question. We're going to come back to the freedom of choice.
I do.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay, well, I love this book. I really do. And I have a boyfriend now who loves Star Wars. I had an ex-boyfriend.
Stick with him. He's a Vader type.
He's not. I had an ex-boyfriend who was obsessed with Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a little worrisome. Could
yeah.
Be okay.
Thank you.
Maybe a little worrisome.
It was, I mean, he's a great guy, and I don't want to say anything bad, but obsession. I actually got to watch and learn so much about it, which was interesting. And we went and we saw John Williams at the Hollywood Bowl, which was phenomenal. I brought my mom and my stepdad, and I made them hold up the lightsabers the minute the Star Wars music wow. came on. And I mean, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But something really resonated with me, and when you wrote, it's the beginning of your book, when your daughter burst into tears at the opening credits.
Right.
Just hearing the music, I was bawling. Right. And I'm like, why? Why is there such an emotional connection for me? My dad took all three of us kids to see those three films. We were with my dad in that movie theater every single time. I remember waiting in the lines. I remember it, you know, it was such an emotional experience. It was with my dad, and he's gone now.
Right.
So, and you talk about that. It's my childhood.
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was another thing that really hit me when you were talking about Lawrence Kasdan. And he had this talk with George Lucas talking about killing off Luke or Yoda.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe him. Like, thank God George Lucas said absolutely not. He wanted to leave it as a fairy tale. He wanted everybody leaving that theater feeling good. And I loved that I've never heard that before, and I never heard these stories. And these are my comments. It's really no question right now, but...
All right, well, I have questions.
I'm the cross-examiner
here.
Actually, here is my question. Here's my question. Where and how do you find these little tidbits, and how much reading did you have to do to come up with this amazing book with
Yeah. Thank you, and thank you for pointing to those two things. I think they're really, you know, crucial to the Star Wars universe for people who even just like it a little.
Yeah.
That your favorite characters don't die, with one little footnote that might be a spoiler, so we're not going to tell that.
Okay.
Luke doesn't die. That's really important and good. Hooray, George Lucas. My daughter, when she sent me that, you know, sent me a little text. She burst into the tears with the opening credits. First time we didn't see it together, she
yeah.
added,
yeah.
which almost makes me cry.
Yeah.
And what you say, completely right, that it makes people link up with their parents or their youth or their own children. And so when I was writing the book, so many people, including, you know, people from countries that aren't particularly friendly to the United States. When I mentioned I was writing a book on Star Wars to break the ice a little bit, their faces would soften, and they talk about their dad taking them, and it would just transport them into a different place in their lives. And I think that's one reason it completely resonates. In terms of my own getting all this stuff, you know, law professor, and if I'm doing something on the 14th Amendment, I'm going to read everything I can on the 14th Amendment. And I'm not sure what my colleagues thought, but for a period of months, my office filled with Star Wars stuff. And so I read everything that I could get my hands on. I'm looking right now in my office at one little piece of my bookshelves, and it's got like 8 Star Wars books, and it's a little piece of the bookshelf, but they're, you know, one of them's a 600-page book.
You know, talking.
I think, Alan, I'm just going to make this comment. Maybe if your dad or mom would have taken you as a kid, you would feel differently.
I have no comment on that because I was old enough to go myself. I want to talk about kids, though, because thank you, Carrie, for saying that, because obviously Cass is doing the right thing and teaching his kids properly. You dedicate the book to Declan, your son, and there's an interesting part for me. It rings true. My son Hudson is 3 years old, and what I've found is he's very attached to my wife Nancy. My daughter Harper, who's 2 years old, is very attached to me. And the part in the book that you talk about, daddies are for boys and mommies are for girls. It's something that I'm dealing with right now, and I'm struggling. So this is how, when you bring Star Wars into real life, that's where it affects me. Tell me about your experiences with Declan and Rianne and how that fits into the book and why I should have some confidence that Hudson's going to come around and be, go to the baseball games with Daddy.
Yeah, well, when my little girl was born, she's now 4, I had an acute sense that my boy, a few years older, would feel a sense of grief and loss because his mother is already kind of busy with her job at the United Nations.
Just a little job she has,
the,
right?
The mom would have another kid, and that would be tough for the little boy. So I found myself singing to him a song that's, I think, really stupid and also deeply offensive. I won't sing it, but the lyrics are...
No, I want to hear you sing it. We had Barry Mann on last week. He was singing, so go ahead.
We better put one of your professionals on to sing, and I will offline tell him the tune. It goes, daddies are for boys and mommies are for girls. And, of course, I knew that's a terrible thing to say, but it both delighted him and kind of disturbed him in a way that didn't run deep, meaning he knew I was saying, I love you, I'm here for you, and here's Dad. Don't worry. There's a parent who's here for you basically whenever you need me. And he loved it. And my daughter, I'll have you know, who was, you know, when she was very little, her mother was mostly taking care of her and feeding her and such, but she's heard the song many times, and she thinks that it has two versions, daddies are for boys, mommies are for girls, and daddies are for girls, mommies are for boys. She's heard both versions, and she thinks they're both true, and she's right.
You
so
know,
the two different versions are complements, not contradictions. So my daughter now, who's 4, Rian, super close to her. She's unbelievably lovable. And my big girl, whose name is Ellen, she's in her 20s. Well, daddy's for that girl.
You know, when you talk about Ellen, she interviewed you. She's a writer, and she interviewed you, and you got into freedom of choice because she had asked you, what answers do you hope I'll find in Star Wars now and forever? And you said that you choose your own path, no one else can. And you make the point in the book about freedom of choice. I think you talked about Padme, which for me is meaningless, but I know it's Darth Vader's
love,
Padme. There's always a choice. Now, you've studied a lot of behavior, human condition. How can you be so sure that people aren't predetermined to make decisions and that they can actually have these choices that are made in Star Wars and that you're encouraging your children that they have the ability to I make a choice versus being the son or daughter of Cass Sunstein and being predetermined, given their background, their environment, and their genetics, to make decisions one way or another.
Okay, so there's the question about what Star Wars has to say, and then there's a question about what each of us thinks. So what Star Wars has to say is that we encounter a path. It might be, you know, forked so that we can go be a smuggler, or we can go back and help the rebellion and our buddy Luke. It might say we can go to the dark side and, you know, try to save our beloved one because of the power of the dark side, or instead stay in the light and avoid evil. It might be that we can go to Alderaan and help Obi-Wan or not. And Star Wars constantly insists that it's up to you, really. That's freedom, and you have it. That's the primary kind of political theme of the movie, and it's also very intimate as well as political.
Is it a circular argument?
It's not a circular argument. It's just a statement of conviction. So it's not really an argument at all. It's just a portrayal of a conviction. So when we get into the question whether there is freedom of choice, that's really a very deep question. And I think I'm not an expert on this by any means. The question is, if we say we have freedom of choice, what would have to be true in order for that to be true?
Right.
So I don't think to say that genetic predispositions are meaningless. I don't think to say that would be necessary in order to agree that freedom of choice exists. So there are genetic predispositions of various kinds. The best account, I think, of freedom of choice is by a philosopher named Harry Frankfurt, who says that freedom of choice means that you have some goals for yourself as well as some impulses and desires. And your goals for yourself might be, you know, to be a good person, to be a good parent, not to be an alcoholic,
right.
To be earning enough for your family, to be a good member of your community. And then you have some impulses, which might be to drink a lot or to strike out at someone.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And the Frankfurt's the kind of freedom of choice is when you are able to follow your aspirations for yourself.
And I think that's exactly what you're talking about when you were talking, for instance, to Ellen in that interview.
Yeah, that's true. She already knows that, I hope, but completely, that she has some sense of what she wants her life to be like. It's a little bit on any given month it could switch, but there are things. She's a good person, and she's carving out her own path.
You know, we've got to take a break in a minute, but when we come back, I really want to talk about, people say Star Wars is my religion, and you kind of talk a little bit about Joseph Campbell's book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And how Lucas kind of took that book and then created these characters. So I want to talk about that, because people actually say that. Star Wars is my religion.
They're just looking for crutches.
No, I think this is, I think there is a good and bad.
All right, we're
going
to debate that when we get back. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We'll be right back.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.
Person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Hey, California, want incredibly low prices on more than 400 styles of high-quality floors? Then see the flooring experts at Lumber Liquidators before Tuesday, and we'll cover the sales tax on everything in our stores. We've got incredibly low prices on beautiful hardwood, bamboo, laminate, vinyl, and more, starting at just 49 cents. Plus, the sales tax is on us, but only until Tuesday. When you want quality hardwood, trust the flooring experts and visit LumberLiquidators.com to find a store near you. Valid in California locations only, July 13th to July 19th, 2016.
Rockin' the RNC like only KABC can. Your common sense. Convention Headquarters. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law on 790 KABC, the intersection of law and virtue. Want an absolute opinion on something completely relative? You'll find it here on 790 KABC.
That's nice. What is that music? Is that Star Wars?
You know what?
Star Trek?
If you do not know the Star Wars music.
That's the guy with the pointy ears.
I'm going to have to get up and walk out of this studio.
I think Cass is leaving
that
too.
That is horrible. Cass, I wouldn't mind if you hung up right now.
We are talking to Cass Sunstein, enjoying it immensely. He is a professor at Harvard Law School. He is one of the top legal scholars. In fact, there were rumors that he may have been the next Supreme Court Justice nominee at one point, approximately 6 or 7 years ago. By the way, real quickly, and one I have to ask you, I've got you on the line. Is it right not to have, in Obama's last year, a vote on the Supreme Court justice?
I don't think that's right. So I agree with the president that there should be a vote. And Judge Garland is a terrific choice and very moderate person. And
yeah, I agree with you fully. But you go way back with President Obama. You were professors together at University of Chicago, right? Law school.
That's true.
And you're pretty tight. You're pretty tight with him, but you do disagree on issues.
Well, there's only one issue in which I've broken with him since I left employment in the government, and that is he believes that A New Hope is the best of the Star Wars movies, and I think that's a colossal blunder. The Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes
is the best
Back.
Of the movies.
Hands down.
What about Rogue One?
Completely right. We'll see Rogue One. I'm sure it'll be good, but the president, I really can't disagree with him on anything except I'm stunned that he would make such a terrible mistake as to rank A New Hope above The Empire Strikes Back.
Good one.
I agree. So getting back to my question, when people say Star Wars is my religion, I think some of them mean it. And if you were to, let's say, you know, God forbid something happens to the Earth and we just blow up and, you know, there's few people living and they find these movies or they find a book on Star Wars, that could be a Bible. It could really.
Yeah. I hope not. As much as I really like them, I think that it's not an ideal place to go if you want spiritual sustenance, though I can understand it. That is what Lucas did, and you referred to this before, is he took many tales, including religious tales that really are at the foundation of, for example, Christianity, and borrowed elements from them. And he described Joseph Campbell, the author of The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which is about the distillation of myths and religions into what Campbell called a monomyth. He said there's just one, really, that humanity has. It's probably not quite true, but there's something important in it, and Lucas believes some version of it. And so the fact is there are religious resonances of many kinds in the Star Wars movies, and that is part of the reason that even though not everyone loves or likes the movies, they have earned over $30 billion.
But Cass, are they just creating meaning where maybe there isn't any meaning that Lucas thought about when he was putting these movies together? For instance, in your book, you say our brains are wired to see patterns where they do not, in fact, exist. And it's really interesting, and I happen to totally agree. You show a picture of these, it looks like faces in a rock, and you say, what is it? You go, it's a rock. It's a rock.
Right.
And, you know, you talk about the randomness. I mean, you're almost a cynic in a way.
No, you're right, but let me qualify it a little bit. So if you said that, you know, you looked up in the sky, and it clearly is the pinstripes of the New York Yankees. So God is telling us, go root for the Yankees or you'll be damned forever. That would be pattern seeking when it's just clouds making what looks like pinstripes. But if you read, let's say, Brown against Board of Education,
right,
and you say there's something in there about second-class citizenship, which is what the Equal Protection Clause is designed to prevent, that is maybe controversial, but it's not made up. It's not like finding a pattern.
But don't you think that pattern recognition comes from being smart or thinking a certain way? How do you generalize it? Isn't it all relative? You talk about the skill of the Jedi.
No, sometimes there is a pattern. So,
but it's only you who has, you can recognize it. What about the poor?
Everyone can. So if you read a book about President Roosevelt,
yeah,
everyone's going to be able to read the patterns that the words on the page make if they're literate in the English language. So some people make things out of Star Wars that aren't plausible understandings of Star Wars. So to say that Jar Jar Binks, you probably don't know who that is,
oh, yes,
but to say that Jar Jar Binks was supposed to be the great character in the prequels, who was going to be the great Sith Lord and who was going to be running the show, people say that, it's clever, it's pattern recognition, but it doesn't have foundations. On the other hand, if you say that the Star Wars movies really are about freedom of choice, and that at every kind of moment where there's a decisive thing that's going to happen to a character, Leia or Luke or Han or the Obi-Wan himself or Anakin, they get to choose. That's there. That's not making
well,
up a pattern.
Well, it's there, and it's entertainment. But, for instance, as a trial lawyer, a lot of times I'll be in front of a judge or a jury, and I'm presenting my case. I'm presenting the evidence. It's so clear to me. I don't understand how someone can't figure it out, because here's the evidence. I'm doing it in a cogent, coherent fashion, yet they don't get it.
Well, one possibility is that you're right and they're not, and they will get it. Another possibility is that you, because you're in advocate role, you find the pattern, but it's not really there, and that they're more objective. So all I want to say about Star Wars is there are some forms of, you know, made-up stuff where people are imposing a pattern of interpretation on the Star Wars narrative, that it's really all about Putin or something. It kind of can be understood to be about Putin, but it's not about Putin in particular.
Right.
Or you could say what the movies are about really is the vulnerability of republics to authoritarian aspirants. That's completely true. That's not controversial. To deny that that's in the movies is not to see the movies. That's right there. So I take your point that they're pattern creators who are a little crazy, though ingenious, and that the human mind is kind of crazy and ingenious sometimes when it sees clouds and says, oh my God, that's the New York Yankees pinstripes. But in Star Wars itself, there are patterns. It's not like pinstripes. It's like, that's there.
So, Cass, why is there such a problem understanding in this upcoming election whether Trump is really an imbecile or whether there's some method to his madness or whether Hillary, you know, is trustworthy or not? It seems that it's not as simple, especially with the masses, as we hope that it would be.
I think it's quite simple, actually, in regards to Hillary, but I'm not going to get into that.
Right,
I think
ahead.
You follow a pattern and you can see it.
So, you know, I think anyone really thinks that Donald Trump is an imbecile. I think they think he's, you know, not a promising candidate for the presidency, and then other people think he is. And that's not about pattern recognition or not. It's about disagreement about where the country is and what it needs, and that's a different thing.
You're being very diplomatic. You should see my Facebook page. There's a lot of people that have some choice words.
Well, they might use the word imbecile, but imbecile means really, really, I think, you know, pending dictionary consultation, imbecile means something like really, really stupid.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And whatever
right.
Trump is, you know, I mean, some people think he's very smart. Some people think he's, you know, above average intelligence, but I think no one thinks he's really, really stupid. They think his critics, and I'm not a supporter, I should say, think he would be not a successful president, maybe much worse than that. And that view, you know, if you have a certain view of the United States, and I think most people actually have that view,
right?
That view is reasonable and correct. For those who like Mr. Trump, they think, you know, the country's in deep trouble, and a strong leader who has business experience and a capacity to knock heads together is kind of the recipe.
Can we geek out just a little bit? We're talking about Star Wars. Let's bring it down to layman's terms a little bit. I just wanted to know what you thought about Lucas wanting to have the triangle between Leia and Han and Luke. And if he had that, was it an incestual thing he wanted? Or was that before he wanted them to be twins?
Okay, that's completely great. So I'll tell you my view, which I'm pretty confident is true, having read all this stuff.
Okay.
That when he originally did A New Hope, there was a love triangle. He once described it before The Empire Strikes Back. He described it as a kind of Gone with the Wind type of thing, where Rhett Butler and Han Solo have something in common, and maybe Luke is a little like that. I guess his name is Ashley, the kind of paler, less dashing guy, and Leia's caught between the two, and you don't know which one she loves. So the fact that they have a kind of romantic kiss, that is Luke and Leia,
right,
is suggestive that he didn't mean them to be brother and sister. It's also suggestive that if you look at the early scripts, they were different ages, which is very suggestive that they weren't twins. You can't be different ages and be twins.
Good point.
So what I think happened was he had a love triangle. Then he decided episode 3, that was going to be the episode 6 as it is, but it was going to be the last one, 3 in release order, 6 in episode order. It was going to be the last one. He had a problem, which is how to conclude this love triangle. He also had a kind of random line with Yoda saying, there is another.
Yes.
Which was a mystery.
Yes.
How do you solve all this in one quick movie? And he said, you know, they're going to be brother and sister. Now, Mark Hamill said that was lame. It was just an effort to top the Vader thing. And that's a view. It was lame.
I thought it was fantastic.
But it also had a kind of, I think Lucas is, you know, when the chips are down, he delivers. So it had a kind of perfect quality, even though it made the fact that they were kind of liked each other in that way, it made a little creepo, and Lucas had to work around that by having Leia say to Luke after he said we're brother and sister, Leia said, I know, I've always known. My reaction to that is, yeah, right. He's trying to convince the audience that this makes coherent sense by having the character say, oh yeah, I always knew, when in fact it was a last minute improvisation where he pulled a rabbit out of a hat.
Wait, did Carrie Fisher do that, or was that Lucas that said that gave that line?
Carrie Fisher as Leia.
Yes,
said, I knew I've always known.
Did Lucas, she improv it, or did he give that to her?
He gave that to
her. Okay.
He gave that to Carrie Fisher as her line, and he kind of had to, because if she'd been startled or, oh my God, we can't be boyfriend and girlfriend now, then the whole thing would have become a different kind of movie. So he had to have her say, both to make the audience less incredulous and to have the thing get quickly resolved. Right? If she said, oh, my God, I have lust for you, and you're my brother, and now I'm really going to have to see a therapist, then it would have been a really hard movie to conclude.
Okay, one more geek out moment, because I know you're dying here, Alan.
You've hijacked the
show. I have, because it's Star Wars. Are you kidding me? Okay, who shot first?
Han shot first.
Yes, he did. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're just agreeing with him.
No, because I mean, you can't. When you change things like that, it doesn't make. I just.
There's too much room for interpretation.
I don't think so.
Well, okay, so I'll tell you a little bit about this. So if you look at the original print, the view that Han shot first, it's completely clear. He shot first.
Yes.
Then Lucas changed it so that in the prints that are now available, he didn't shoot first. They shot at the same time. That was a mistake, I think, in terms of the coolness of Han Solo.
Yes.
The fact that he shot first, he's a rogue. That he was about to get shot, so it wasn't awful that he shot first. It was just his rogueness and control of the situation. So that was great.
Yeah, he angered a lot of people by doing that.
It was a mistake, I agree, but it's an honorable mistake, and here's why. He had a young daughter for whom he was kind of refixing the movies, and the notion that the male hero is a killer, he's a gentle soul, George Lucas, was protecting his young daughter by having a more, let's say, benign Han Solo than A New Hope originally had. I agree with you, but tip of the hat to nice dad, George Lucas.
Nice dad. That is such a positive way because, you know, I don't know anything about what you're talking about, but I do know about Vader, and I look at myself and say, what part of me is Vader? And you probably do the same. I think you've admitted in the past that, you know, there's certain things that we all have where we're not perfect. So when you say nice dad, there's a positive message. Is that what we're looking at as we move forward? Because we've got to close in a few minutes, but I want to find out, first of all, what's next for Star Wars from Cass Sunstein, and then I want to find out what's next for Cass Sunstein.
Well, I think the positive messages are threefold. One is that each of us is making up the narrative of our own lives, like tonight. And
yes.
You can take it in one direction or another. It could be a small thing, like do a nice deed for someone, or a large thing, like try another project. So that's, I think Kasdan and Lucas are agreed on that one.
Here, here.
Theme number two, redemption is always possible. So if there's someone with whom you're estranged or you have awkward relations, that's kind of a very small version of what Luke and Darth Vader had, fix it, and you can. And that's always possible. If you've done something you really regret, you can make amends. That's there. And the third theme really is about parents and children. If you've got parents who are still alive, give them a call. If you have kids, be maybe 10% better parent than you would otherwise be. I think those are the enduring things about Star Wars. In terms of what's next for Star Wars, well, I had, both because I worked in the White House and because I was on the post-Snowden Communications and Intelligence Review Board, I had top secret clearance, and I didn't violate the conditions of access to classified information. If I knew anything about what was next for Star Wars, that wouldn't be technically classified under U.S. law.
No, it would not.
But it would have something like that status, and not telling.
So are you saying that you'd rather be better friends with George Lucas than President Obama?
No, I would say, no, George Lucas isn't in charge of the Star Wars franchise anymore, and this is not about loyalty to any particular person. It's respect for confidentiality. But the fuller story is I have no idea what's next for Star Wars.
Do you think he made the right move by selling it?
I think for him, yes. Whether he made the right move for the franchise as a whole, I think it's too soon to tell. He's a risk taker. And so what he would have done with the movies, who knows? The variance for George Lucas is, I think, higher than the variance for J.J. Abrams et al., meaning Lucas can soar. He can do something that you've never seen before.
Sure.
He can also do something that make you think, oh man, really?
Yeah,
yes,
what's going on?
The last three films did that to me. I was very disappointed.
I want to end on a high note.
I wanted to cry.
Okay,
no,
so
but the next, J.J. Abrams did a phenomenal job.
I agree. So hooray for Abrams.
Yes.
So what I'd say about his decision, Star Wars, the franchise is in very safe hands. It's going to be somewhere between good and tremendous.
That makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate the three points you made, the themes, because whether you believe in free will or not, I think it is within each of us to carry out those three themes that you just articulated a couple minutes ago. Somehow we can come into our own being, in our own existence, and be able to appreciate the positiveness of relationships, of family relationships, of doing the right thing and helping other people. It will make everyone feel better. And I know that so many people feel good when they're talking Star Wars, as I can tell you are today. I want to just finally ask you, Cass, what's next for Cass Sunstein outside of the world according to Star Wars?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm going to do anything else on Star Wars. I have a book brewing right now on democracy and social media. So it has a lot to do with echo chambers that people are designing for themselves on Facebook and Twitter, and echo chambers that are being designed for us now that we are in the age of the algorithm.
Didn't you just blog recently on Facebook?
I might have done that.
You don't even remember? It's called Facebook's new news feed isn't progress, July 5th.
Yes, that's correct. So
I hate to say it, but your wife is right. You wake up in the morning, you turn to your laptop sitting beside your bed. You don't even go to the bathroom. You don't even go get breakfast. You just start working, and you don't even know what's going to come out.
Well, certainly I don't know what's going to come out. I have to say that while sometimes I wake up and start writing, I think my wife and children are pleased to see that most times I wake up and start, you know, trying to open the eyes and saying hello to everybody.
So Facebook's new news feed isn't progress?
I don't think so. I think it's an effort to give people really a kind of daily me, where you get
right.
your news feed, which is what you and your buddies want to see then. And you can completely understand why Facebook would do that. It reflects one understanding of freedom. But in a democratic society, there's a lot of serendipity out there.
I agree.
You open the newspaper and you see lots of stuff that's good to see that you didn't choose in advance.
And perhaps, Cass, it's just an escape, like a lot of people feel with Star Wars. And what's wrong with escape, right?
Well, no, escape is good. So if people just want to enjoy their Facebook feed, that's great. The problem is that a very high percentage of people, and it's higher every day, are getting a significant amount of their news consumption from Facebook, not from newspapers or websites. And so if Facebook is helping to define so much of what people consider news, then the loss of serendipity and unanticipated, unchosen exposure to stuff, that's significant.
That is significant. The book is called The World According to Star Wars, New York Times bestseller. You can get it almost anywhere. If you're staying home, just get it off of Amazon, probably the easiest way while you're on your Facebook feed. Cass Sunstein, thank you so much for being a guest on Gervie's Law. We've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you so much, Cass.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Pechanga Resort and Casino is now America's number one casino.
That's right.
USA Today readers voted Pechanga the best casino in the U.S. Now you can experience the best at Pechanga Resort and Casino, just off the 15 in Temecula. Book your Pechanga experience today at Pechanga.com.
Are you in good hands with your insurance company? Are they a good neighbor? This weekend on Champions of Justice, Tom Girardi talks with an attorney who takes on insurance companies when they refuse to pay their policyholders. He's legendary lawyer Wiley Aitken. You will be amazed at the stories he tells about policyholders who have been denied payments after years of paying their premiums. Tune in, Champions of Justice, Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10, here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Look out, Cleveland!
The Republican National Convention is coming your way, and KABC is there.
I'm in Cleveland Trick.
All week, John Phillips broadcasts from Cleveland, starting Monday morning with Doug and T-Ray. Then joins Jillian for the drive home from 3 to 6. Plus, we'll have the resources of CNN to keep tabs on all the action for the most comprehensive RNC coverage. Count on your common sense. Convention Headquarters, Talk Radio 790, KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Carrie, well, that was really something. I felt the force was with us.
I can't believe you just said that. He was really knowledgeable.
Yeah,
he was
amazing.
Really knowledgeable.
He knows everything. And if you Google him, Cass Sunstein, you're going to find out a lot about this legal scholar. I was going to call him a dude, but this legal scholar.
I mean, to take Star Wars and then...
To make it relevant to life
and law and the Supreme Court. And, I mean, pretty amazing.
By the way, you were very impressive with your knowledge. And I know you haven't studied it like the Harvard Law School professor. But anyway, we're out of time. I hope you had a great birthday this week.
I did.
I know you were celebrating all week.
And thanks for the healthy cupcakes.
Yeah, that was back then. And all the best to you for many more. We are going to have to cut out now, as much as I'd like to talk to you more about Star Wars.
Next time.
Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Carrie Kasem. We'll see you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.